American Landon.
Hi, Yolanda.
I just like to take a moment because I'm like really tired now. I'm like kind of, but I just want to take a moment so that God can do for me what I can't do for myself, and get out the way and allow a clear and concise message to come through. May I have that moment now, please? Thank you. Again, I'm an addict. My name is Yolanda P. And I'd like to thank this committee, first of all, for inviting me to this wonderful retreat. This is awesome. I have been having an awesome time. I met some awesome people, you know. And, you know, that higher, that, you know, the point that broadened the base and the higher the point of freedom. And I'm like, I'm loving it. I'm loving this. You know, so I'm also very grateful to be here to share on recovery and relapse. That's my topic, I'm gonna share my experience with hope and recovery and relapse. I've been here. I came into recovery, Narcotics Anonymous, in '94, and that's when I first, when I first started coming around. I think I came here about '94, and I stayed for, I think I had acquired like 3 years and 11 months, something like that. And I took the suggestions, I got a sponsor, got a home group, I was vigilant, doing the work, all that. And you know, I got into this thing, and you know, I love this thing, this recovery thing, and I really got in it. And, you know, I came in. I was riding that pink cloud. They told me about it. Said if you get on that pink cloud, ride it. You know. And I got here and I was on that pink cloud and I was like, yeah, yahoo. You know. And I was like, I love this. You know. So that's how it went for me. You know. And I did some work and stayed connected through sponsorship and going to meetings regularly. I also was one of them addicts that came when I got here. I was still working a job. I'm still working. I was still socially acceptable, basically. I was still employable. So when I got here, I was still working. Like I said, things seem to be looking okay for me, you know. And I started like doing some living life on life terms and started doing some things different. I started going to school at that time, and so I incorporated school and everything, and everything looked good, you know. Everything was going well, and I was doing this recovery thing. So, you know, then I stopped going to meetings because life became very busy for me. You know, I had a life now. Got my life back. I look good. You know, we get the physical back first. You know, we everything good. You know, I had a nice apartment. So things is okay, right? So I thought, you know, but what happened, you know, for me, this drug recovery and relapse thing, you know, I thought I knew something about this recovery thing, you know, and I found out that I didn't know anything. Can I get this chair here?
Yes.
Because I'm going to sit still. So, thank you. I thought I knew something about this recovery, you know. And what happened for me was, like, you know, I began to take my will back. And what I knew about recovery was not enough. You know, I didn't know anything. You know, what I found out was, like, after things became, you know, okay, I thought I could handle it. You know, like it talks about in the literature, you know, I got to the point where I felt that I could handle my life, I could handle it, I didn't need y'all help, I didn't identify, I didn't understand, I didn't want to, you know. I had already had disconnecting, you know. I already started disconnecting, you know, through sponsorship, you know. I called my sponsor and I stopped calling her, you know. The next thing I know, I had picked up. You know, before I knew it, I had picked up. You know, and it talks about, you know, about the reservations, right? You know, like, the reservations, like, you know, I thought that I could drink again. You know, because when I first came around, I really didn't believe that I had to do this for the rest of my life. You know, I thought that I wasn't that bad off. I really wasn't as bad off as the rest of you. You know, y'all looked at really pretty toe up to me. I still had my shoes on. They, you know. Yeah. So, you know, but, you know, I didn't know that, you know, I was just as toe up too, right? So, you know, like I said, things became, you know, it talks about in recovery and relapse, it talks about the old boogaboos coming back, you know? And I remember, you know, how the old boogaboos creep back into my life, you know, creep back into me. And, you know, and many times in our recovery, the old boogaboos will haunt us. Life may again become meaningless, monotonous, and boring, you know? And for me, it was like I felt that I had arrived. I got to a place where, okay, this is it. So I must be in recovery, you know. And I've gotten to a place where I didn't need y'all anymore. So, you know, and that was at 3 years and 11 months. So after that, you know, it took me about almost a year to get back. You know, that 30 days was like getting 30 years, you know. And when I say getting back, it's never about getting back, you know. It's all about, you know, just coming back, you know. And like what I found out was like what I knew was always was subject to revision, you know. So I had to, like, you know, save my ass and not my face, you know, and get back into this recovery thing. And it took, you know, it talks about in relapse and recovery, it talks about, like, you know, sometimes it takes a jarring experience, you know, to help us to get back, you know. And for me, like, it was some things that was going on in my life. There was, I had, you know, a death of a loved one. I had, my dad had died. And that was one of the biggest impacts when I used, you know. And at the time of his death, I remember I was trying to come back. And I remember reaching out and calling a few addicts, you know, and letting them know that I needed some help. You know, it wasn't easy trying to come back. And but at the same time, you know, I came. Nevertheless, I got back. But I still wasn't back. You know, I was still using. I was still, like, drinking, but I was showing up, coming to a meeting here and there and stuff, but I was coming back. So, and I remember y'all always told me, just keep coming. You know, no matter what, just keep coming. You know, I came, but I didn't share, you know, but I would, you know, come. And until something, you know, hit me, you know, to let me get, you know, this recovery piece back again, you know. So it talks about in recovery and relapse, like this part, like, really sticks out to me. It talks about after a member has had some involvement in our fellowship, a relapse may be the jarring experience that brings about a more rigorous application of the program. By the same token, we have observed some members who remain abstinent for long periods of time
whose dishonesty and self-deceit still prevent them from enjoying complete recovery and acceptance within society, you know. And that's like, I mean, that's me, you know, because my dishonesty and my deceit, my self-deceit, deceiving myself, you know. For, you know, I wasn't fooling nobody. I wasn't fooling you, because y'all know who I am, you know. I was fooling myself, thinking that I had, you know, got in a place and I didn't need this anymore, you know. They told me not to compare, but to identify, you know, and that was something that, you know, that I wasn't being true to myself with, because I wasn't identifying, you know. I didn't want to be an addict, you know. You know, I don't know who get up and say, oh, I'm going to be an addict today, mm-hmm. You know. You know, So when I got into this recovery, you know, Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. You know, I'm forever grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm grateful to be in this program. You know, I there's nothing else that ever worked for me. You know, no matter, I went to church, I tried psychiatry, because I thought it was something wrong with me mentally. All I needed to do was just, you know. And none of those methods were sufficient, you know. I remember, you know, like working a more vigorous program once I got back into this process, you know, and reaching out more, and I started getting more involved in service, and that was another thing that helped me in my recovery, and it still sustains my recovery today. One thing that stood out to me, like this time in my process of recovery, and I remember like at 6 months, you know, in recovery, that it was some things that I had missed, you know. One being, you know, like it talks about passing over things, over things with a minimum concern, you know. And I remember for me that was like the fellowship, you know. It talks about in the second step, you know, passing over things with a minimum concern, you know. And I used to always, I would say, I never had to use again, because that's what y'all said. So I said what everybody else said. Everybody was like, they never had to use again. But internally, I didn't believe that I never had to use again, because it had not internalized. I said it, but I didn't really truly understand it. I didn't believe it, you know. So it was like, for me, like, that you never have to use again. I didn't get that into this recovery. In my 6 months in this recovery, and I was reading this in Recovery and Relapse, and this is like, it says in an addict who by any means can lose, even for a time, the need or desire to use, and has free choice over impulsive thinking and compulsive action, has reached a turning point that may be the decisive factor in his recovery. And that was the decisive factor in my recovery, because that's when I got it. It was like, dang, the light went up on. And I was like, wow, now I got that I never had to use again. So now I understand, today, I never have to use again, no matter what happens, through death, loss of a loved one, lose a relationship, in a relationship, out of relationship, don't matter. I never have to use again. So today I truly understand that. And no matter what, I can go through anything, you know. And it talks about, you know, two of our inherent enemies is apathy and procrastination. And procrastination is one of my apathy, but the procrastination, I'm a big procrastinator, you know. I put off some things that I would never put off today, which you can do tomorrow, right? You know, and I still today in my recovery, you know, procrastinate on some stuff that I can, like, you know, I hold on to, and I need to, like, let it go, you know. And I can, like, you know, I look at my recovery today and where I'm at in my recovery. I love recovery, you know. Like I said, I'm truly grateful. A grateful addict don't use, and that was another thing, you know, that I didn't get, that I didn't ever, about the being a grateful addict, not using. So it talks about our resistance to change seems built in, and only a nuclear blast of some kind will bring about an alteration or initiate another course of action. A relapse, if we survive it, may provide the change for the demolition process. A relapse and sometimes subsequent death of someone close to us can do the job of awakening us to the necessity for vigorous personal action, you know. And like today, that's what I try to do. I try to like stay vigilant in my process of recovery, you know, because I know what can happen, you know. I'll never forget, you know. I never forget how long it took me to get to come back into this process, you know, only to lose it, you know. I have more clean time than I've ever had in my entire life, you know. I have 7 years, you know, after losing the times I had before, but it's not about what I had, it's about where I'm going, you know. So, and I understand, I know that today, it's not where I was, it's where I'm going today. And today my recovery is like, it's taken on a different growing experience for me. And like with this recovery relapse, I'm looking at like, where am I at today, you know? And I can also, you know, identify and say that today, with the recovery and relapse, I know that today I don't have to use. But relapse do happen. And sometimes we go through emotional relapses and as well as spiritual relapses. And I can say that today that, you know, I've been experiencing in my recovery, you know, and I, you know, talked to, you know, earlier somebody was sharing about, you know, being here and how, you know, it's like you get honest. You know, and where I'm at today is feeling like I've gotten complacent, and it's like subtle, you know. I've gotten to the place where I'm feeling like I'm going to meetings and I don't want to be there no more. You know, I'm tired of seeing the same people. I'm tired of hearing the same stories. You know. So, and I understand that, you know, that's my disease trying to come at me again, you know. And where I'm at today in my recovery, you know, knowing that that when we start getting sick and tired of ourselves again, you know, my disease can take me back, you know. And that's where it's trying to get me. It's trying to, you know, get me, you know, where I can be, where I'm stuck. You know, it talks about in recovery and relapse, talks about complacency is the enemy of members with substantial clean time. If we remain complacent for long, the recovery process ceases, you know. And so I'm like, where I'm at right now, it's like, you know, trying to find, like, I'm not quite sure where should I go, but I understand that I need to stay in this process. But at the same time, I feel like I'm like stuck. I feel like I'm stuck right now. And it's not because, and I don't want to blame. It's not about nobody else. It's about what I'm willing to do. What I'm willing to do to get to the other side, you know, so I can get out of where I'm at right now, you know. So, you know, that's recovery and relapse, you know. And like I was, you know, in reading this recovery and relapse, I understand too, like, you know, if I read it, I never have to use again. You know, this is a proven plan of action. You know, it talks about the disease will manifest apparent symptoms in us, denial returns, along with obsession and compulsion, guilt, remorse, fear, and pride may become unbearable. You know, and I could say, like, you know, honestly, I've been kind of like feeling that way lately. You know, it's not something that, okay, I'm like, oh, I'm going to use. No. But I'm talking about being in the relapse mode. You know, and that's where I've been, you know, and it's like, I'm so grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be here, you know, like to reaffirm myself back into my recovery. You know, this is like a reaffirmation for me. You know, it's not like, okay, I could be in a meeting, like somebody was sharing that earlier about, I could be in a room full of 20,000 people and still feel alone. You know, I'm like one of them kind of addicts, you know, I'm real comfortable by myself. You know, I can be comfortable at home by myself. You know, I isolate. It's easy for me to get into a little rut and isolate by myself and not be bothered. And I have, you know, a sponsor. I have a home group. I have connection, you know, to other people, to other addicts. You know, and sometimes I don't want to be bothered. Sometimes I get tired. You know, and I know it's not that I'm tired of recovery. It's just that I'm needing something a little more. I'm hungry. I don't know. And I've been talking to other recovering addicts, you know, and trying to get to a place and where I can like get back into the growth. You know, it talks about being, even if I'm in this place, in the recovering relapse, talks about this can be my greatest source of growth as well. So I understand that, you know, this too shall pass. And because I'm here, it doesn't mean I'm going to stay here. But I need to talk about it so that I don't, because I don't know. You know, I know that, what I do know, I know I ain't got to use, right? But I know that if I stay here, I know that's not going to be good either. You know, I could stay abstinent, but I ain't going to recover. It talked about, you know, here that the recovery process ceases, you know. So I don't want my recovery to cease. I just want to, like, get the help that I need, you know. And so in recovery and relapse, you know, when it talks about talking about the first step, you know, first step. You know, denial and the first step, conflict in our minds. If we let the obsession of using overcome us, we are doomed. Only a complete and total acceptance of the first step can save us. We must totally surrender ourselves to the program. So I'm like, you know, I'm like at another place where I need to surrender again. You know, so I'm like where I'm at right now is like coming to a deeper surrender. You know, and like talking about it, you know, I'm feeling some freedom. You know, a pain shared is a pain lesson. And I haven't been like in the space that I've been in. I've been like feeling a little like angry, irritated, even at work. You know, I work in the field that's like very challenging. You know, I work in a field with in a health field. You know, and I'm grateful for that job. You know, I know that I'm the only but God put me there. It wasn't something that I seek, because if I had to seek it, it wouldn't have been there, because I would have put myself in a place where it would be money, property, and prestige. Prestige, you know. This job is not, it offers prestige, but it doesn't offer, like, the money aspect of it, you know. So, but I love the job that I do. I work with teens, you know, that are troubled, you know. And, at times, you know, like, you know, I've been finding myself, you know, in a place where I'm like becoming irritated, and like a lot of them, they just like me, and I work in a group home with young women, and they just like me, and I'll never forget, like, you know, like, just like, you know, we more alike than different, and I'm finding that, you know, a lot of the women, that young ladies that I help, are like, they just like me. And I'll never forget this one young lady I got attached to, that working with her and trying to help her. And I remember getting this relationship with this young lady that we used to be at odds. You know, she used to be like, every time I come to work, she wanted to like tack me, I'd tack her back, and, you know, it was like this whole dynamic. It was like, wait a minute, you know. And after, you know, that went on for a minute, then, you know, we finally like let go and decide, you know, be open and allow to see if we like knew one another and, you know, what we can, you know, get from one another and grow. And what I got from this young lady was, like, I'll never forget, she shared some really deep personal stuff with me that happened to her, and the same things that happened to her happened to me. You know, I'm talking about some identification. And I'll never forget this one, like, they journal. And so, like, in her journal, she shared something with me, and I seen it, and she wrote it down, and I was like, wow, that was the same stuff that I wrote in my fourth step. Mm-hmm. You know, and it always goes back to that stuff in my fourth step. You know, talking about that, I mean, she had in here clear, me against the world. And that was me. And I was like, I always felt like it was always me by myself against the world. I always had to fight. This one, the young lady's like, you know, she a fighter. She fight everything. I'm talking about physically fight. You know, she don't care. She gonna fight, you know, anything. You know, and that was me. I mean, growing up, I always fought. I fought boys. I fought everybody. I ain't care, you know. And, man, I grew up, I was a little tomboy. You know, man, when I seen that, I was like, man, damn. I was like, did you make that up? You know, I couldn't believe it. I was like, well, where did that come from? Because I couldn't believe that somebody else was just like me, you know, other than just like, and guess what? She an addict, but she in a different program, you know. But she an addict, and she came by way, you know, from family that was abusive, you know, in the drugs, alcohol, and stuff. That's why she's in the program that she's in, you know. Man, it's like, you know, it always like we got a saying that talks about reach one, teach one, you know. And if I don't do anything else, I hope that I can make a difference. If not just to millions or thousands, it's just one. If I don't reach anybody, I hope that I help myself, you know. And and that's what it's about, you know, and hoping that I make a difference in somebody's life, if not just my own, you know. And God still ain't finished with me yet, you know. And I know, in no matter where I'm at right now, and feeling where I'm feeling about, you know, I'm just like where I'm at and feeling like in my sponsorship, you know. And I need to, maybe I need to talk about that, you know. I love my sponsor, you know. I've had a long relationship with her, and you know, since I've been in this process, I've had about eight sponsors, about six, maybe six sponsors, six, seven sponsors, you know. And and what I learned since I got here, it wasn't so that you know, when I first got my first sponsor, that I never heard in the literature anywhere that, you know, I had to stay with that sponsor for life. You know, I've heard of people saying that they've had only one sponsor and they never found the need to move on, but that's not my story. You know, but nevertheless, one thing that always stuck with me and that's going to continue to stick with me is that sponsorship is truly the heartbeat of this program. And that's one thing I ain't going to never be without. I'm not, you know, I'm not going to walk around here and be without sponsorship. You know, no matter what happened, no matter what's going down the pipe, I'm going to have me a sponsor and keep me a home group. I'm going to stay connected, you know, because I know that whatever happens, it's going to pass, but I need to, like, you know, get honest with, you know, where I'm at, you know, because I'm not feeling like I'm moving in a place where I need to be. You know, I'm talking about, like, yeah, I do this, I work the steps, you know. And that's another thing, you know, like this time around, I went to school. You know, but at the same time, I did something different in this process. I didn't allow, because I'm a full-time worker. I work full-time and I also go to school. I didn't let that be a stumbling block in my recovery. I continue to still do 12-step work. You know, I continue to still get with my sponsor. And then there are times when, you know, where I'm at, like, now I had to, like, I took a break from school, you know, because what I understand is, like, I felt that I was getting too caught up with school and work and not having enough time for me. Not having enough time to, like, get on with my step work. And I didn't want to, like, put my step work on the back burner, and I need to find some balance, you know. And it's like right now I'm not finding the balance that I need, because I don't feel like there's anybody there for me, Even though I know that there's somebody there for me, I don't feel like there's somebody there for me, you know. And and it's like really hard right now because I'm like, you know, I've been praying about it, you know. I have been talking about it because I don't want to be. And I'm feeling like I need to move on to sponsorship, but I ain't been talking about it, you know. And I don't want to be like moving to another sponsor, and I'm like in my 10th step. And I don't know if anybody understands. I can identify it, you know. I'm just trying to I'm trying to find some balance. I'm trying to get to a place where, okay, wherever I'm at, I need, get the help that I need. Because right now, I'm feeling distant. And, you know, I understand that, you know, when we go in this process, like, you know, sponsorship is a two-way street. And, you know, our sponsors go through stuff just like we go through stuff. And I don't put my sponsor anywhere that she's still a recovering addict just like me. And, you know, so I'm just going to, like, put it in God's hands. You know, I'm going to pray about it and turn it over and see where that takes me from there, you know. I'm going to leave the results to God. I'm going to do the work, and I'm going to do what I need to do, but I'm going to leave the results to God, you know. If nothing else, you know, I've learned that, you know, recovery, you know, it happens in our, I don't know. You know what? I'm gonna keep coming. Thank you.
Not how you got in my head, but okay.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker. If I may, please, could you help me welcome Richard D. P. D. from the Steps of Life group of NA.
I like his name, Richard P. I'd like to thank this area for asking me to speak at the last minute. Someone else was supposed to speak, and I'm filling in. So, not that I need to get the opportunity to prepare or think on the subject, but relapse or recovery and relapse is part of my story, so I shouldn't have no problem at all. It's like just take the time, you know. I think I came up with this new prayer, right? My new prayer is like, dear God, don't let the disease of addiction get a hold of me. More important, dear God, don't let me get in the way of my life and fuck it up. Okay. So the topic is recovery and relapse. Most of the time you hear people say relapse and recovery, but it's recovery and relapse. And where I come from, right, I come from an area that's well-dotted, they do a lot of work. They dissect and bisect and they get into the literature. More importantly, they work on trying to live the literature. And I was always taught, in order to relapse, you must recover first. So if I come here and I never learn, if I never work on recovery, and I continue to use, I'm just using. I ain't relapsed yet. Because I ain't, recovery is about an active or profound change in my attitudes, my behaviors, and my thinking. So I came here in 92. I got 5 years. I had 6 years in a couple days. And it took me 18 months to start on this journey to get 30 days. But what I came in here with was a attitude of indifference, tolerance to spiritual principles. See, I came here with my image of an addict was not me. When I came here, I had a lot of yets too. I came in here, I wasn't a fucking addict. I wasn't like y'all. I didn't use like I used. I didn't cop like y'all cop. I came in here too with a job, a wife, house, and a damn good job. I never stood on corners. I never stole from anyone. I had a job where I made good money, and I made it every day. My profession was in the restaurant business. I waited on tables, and I was the middleman at this restaurant. I was copping for other cats, and I was skimming off the top of the package and charging more money for the stuff. So I used like that, I was fortunate because I had an uncle that was in recovery, right? And when he came to my house one time, I was hustling, and I'm like, I don't need that program. But I was just dodging the marijuana, lacing weed. Drinking was my thing, but I always had a lot of liquor because I worked in the restaurant business. We do banquets and all that. I took a lot of liquor home, a lot of wine home. So I started on this journey, and my identification was so high because it talks about and who's an addict. You know, because y'all don't see me when I got here because I thought I came here for a drug problem. Only to find out I came here for a living problem. I have a disease that makes detection, diagnosis, and treatment difficulty. I didn't know I had a fucking disease of addiction because I thought it was just like, you know, I spent all my money. I used too much. Now this time I'm going to do it different. I'm going to just use whatever I take out your package. I'm not going to spend my money. You know. And the hard part was so hard because I worked in a restaurant and I seen people have good times. And when the restaurant closed, everybody in the restaurant got high. The cooks, everybody. And it was just powder land. And we would stay in the restaurant 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Lo and behold, that my wife at the time, I didn't know she was using the way she was using, you know. And I still had this attitude of different because I thought, I seen people start out with stuff and using, and I seen where the drugs took them. Here's where the attitude of the difference came in, because I said, I ain't going to use like that. I don't know what's wrong with them people selling all their shit, because I ain't going to become like that. I'm stronger than that. Talks about willpower not being enough. See, because I thought I had enough willpower that I'm going to do it different. You know. And it's attitude of indifference and tolerance towards spiritual principles, right? And it talks about these are things that were defeated in our recovery. Dishonest, not open-minded, and I wasn't willing. See, because I only came up in here out of desperation once I crossed that imaginary line. It came to a point where I could no longer get high socially. I could no longer get high and go to work. I came here talking about a lot of stuff I didn't do. And I'm going to tell you, God help us. When I came in here hearing people's stories and all the stuff they did, they tell me I have a toolbox and put this stuff in. I was putting negative stuff in my toolbox. A reservation that I didn't even know about. It talks about having a reservation. A reservation will defeat us, right? Let me start reading the book. But it talks about having a reservation. And not knowing I had a reservation that I was going to take all these yes that I didn't do when I was out there the first time. And it talks about reservation rises as a benefit that this program has to offer from us, right? And I was like, man, when I got here, I ain't do none of that stuff. I wasn't like y'all. So when I went back out, I had a sponsor. I had the sponsor to say at this one time, said, yeah, you keep using motherfuckers, you're going to do these things. I never had stole from my moms. Never stole from anybody. Never hung out on the block. Never asked anybody for anything, because I would blow $200 or $300. And fuck it, I just go back to work the next day and make the money. I never got high at work. But in the end game, I went to work high, driving the car going to work getting high, afraid to leave home because they were getting high when I left home, only to go to work to be in the freezer getting high, only to be in the freezer to getting high, and tell them I gotta leave. I'm sick. So, I came in here and I ain't had them yet. But I went back out, and a lot of stuff that I said I never did, I did them, most of them, all of them. And at the end, I was at a yet that I heard people do. And when all the dope ran out, and I had that, yeah, you know, you had a long walk back to where were you going? Because I was basically homeless. I was staying with my mother, so I was homeless. And I'm on my way back home, and I ain't got no more ways and means to get no more money. And I see this chump. He on the other side of the street, and I'm walking. I'm like, Lord, please don't act. Don't let him proposition me. Because if you proposition me today, I just might go. You know. And lo and behold, he didn't proposition me, but at that point in time, I was willing to go just to get one more. And it talks about in recovery and relapse. Relapse is never an accident. It does happen, and if you don't work this program. And the thing in my area that bothers me, yeah, I don't know how y'all affect people that might, you know, have a tough time getting it, because what I learned, because I beat myself up in guilt and shame, and I got to the end of the road where I thought that, you know, I was at the point of no return based on coming in with two things I learned. They told me when I came here, old time told me two things, two secrets. Keep coming and reach out for help. So, I've been here since 92, but I never stopped coming to the meeting. Mm-hmm. Even with using, I never stopped. Right? And I had a dishonesty because I would come to the meeting. I had a friend. And everybody thought he was my sponsor. This guy named Bobby T. We hung out every day, all day. He never understood how we would hang out from 9 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. How this motherfucker used between 11, 12 o'clock at night to 9 o'clock in the morning. But I didn't have the ability to tell y'all I would be sitting in a meeting. I was scared of y'all. Scared to death. Sitting in a meeting, have a craving, know I want to use, but I didn't have the ability to tell y'all that I want to use. See, because I didn't read that part where it talks about we thinking that it's shameful for addicts to want to use. But it's a natural habit. That's all we did all our lives. So for me, wanting to use is natural. You know, but it takes a lot of courage to say, like, you know, I use. Oh, I want to use. And people say this is part that bothers me. People that share their story, like, relapse is not a part of my story. Oh, well, if relapse is not a part of your story, shut the fuck up. For me. They say, I haven't had any interruptions in my recovery. Since the time I've been here, I haven't found it necessary to use. But if relapse is not a part of your story, don't say nothing. Because me. I'm going to say me. Or those that's like me, that relax. It gives me an attitude like, what are you talking about? And I know the book says we don't have to use again. I bred myself. We don't ever have to use again. But my process is my process. I don't get clean in my time. I didn't get clean in your time. I got clean in God's time. Because what I understand today, that people coming here, the people that came here and stayed right away, they had a well-whooped ass. Right? But when I came here out of desperation. I came in here not sure about what I want to do. I only ran up in here because I stole my mother-in-law's money, her rent money. And when I heard her wake up and find out her rent money was gone, and I heard that cry like, oh, no, yeah, I didn't. I didn't want to face the feelings and the... I didn't want to face my feelings of her being hurt because her rent money was gone. She was on a fixed income. So rehab looked like a good idea. I can get away from my taking care of my personal responsibilities. Because it talks about and why we're here. The inability to take care of my personal responsibilities, I was looking for something. And I thought I found it in drugs. But it talks about, man, it talks about, because we last, it talks about many of us do clean time, long period of absence as a sign of recovery. Or those that keep coming in and out as a sign of failure. That's not recovery. You know, it talks about members experience our program in the same long period of time, clean time. Only to use again because of my dishonest with myself. I just wasn't honest with myself because I came in here straddling the fence. I talked about I didn't want to be an addict, but I came in here straddling the fence because I still wanted to use. Honestly, I still wanted to fucking get high. I love getting high, right? But I didn't want the consequences that was coming with getting high at this point. And I couldn't tell me the truth. Because I came in wanting to be... I came in the same shit I came in with Brummy to using, I came up in here with. I came here trying to be part of. I came in here trying to fit in. You know? And I came in because I was a part of a family that they did step work. I came in right away doing step work. And only to be honest about it, it wasn't about the fucking step work. It was about a race for me. It was about the ability to say, I done step one, step two, step three, step four. And I stopped at step four. And it talks about those that don't work the step four, generally go back out to using. I didn't want to look at me. But I only did the step work so I can say I was doing step work. I wasn't internalizing it. I wasn't doing the step work to put it inside me. I was trying to fit in. I was just trying to be a part of y'all. You know, I raised my hand and said I was an addict, but I didn't believe. Just, and, you know, my mouth was dry, so I'm going to get some water. But, you know, it talks about the... And I couldn't get with that belief part. You know... But it talks about the step, second step won't work unless we believe it is, and before we ongoing recovery, it is necessary that we take the second step, that we believe in the second step. And the purpose of the second step is to fill a void. Because you're talking about taking away my dope. You're talking about taking away from getting high, but I don't know how the ability to replace it with something else. So naturally, when I didn't want to deal with my emotions or I didn't know how to deal with a craving or a desire to use, you know, because the meat kept me clean for 90 minutes. They kept me clean all day from 9 to 11:30. Because we had a Midnight Madness meeting at that time. It kept me clean all day. But when I got with meats, when I got with, like, you know what, all day I went to meats, all day I hung with recovering addicts. But I didn't tell nobody. I didn't get fucking high. I didn't tell me the truth. I still wanted to fucking get high when I got here. It wasn't until, like, I went through my process that I was like, had a will with that. I was like, listen, this don't work no more. And I truly don't want to get high ever again. I truly don't have to run from what I'm feeling. You know, and it's like, it wasn't about the getting high now. I was talking about, y'all was telling me about learning a new way of life. You know, about learning how to live, man. And that I can replace that urge, that dis-ease with myself, with whatever. And the second step, it talks about coming to believe in something. It ain't, second step, it ain't talking about a God. It's talking about something. It could be the group. the literature, the people, somebody sharing, or just the belief that you believe that I can get this thing, you know. And in recovery, and relapse, it talks about the stages of relapse. Everybody ever hear their story, relapse is always the same story. It don't change. The same feeling. You know, we stop doing the things that was necessary to get the time that we had. I forgot about the work and the effort that it took to get the amount of clean time that I had. And most times, the first step in denial, conflict with one another. And I cut myself off from the path. And I'm talking about, like, it talks about recovery and relapse. It talks about we get ourselves away from the people that knows us best. And it's y'all. Y'all know me best. I would get away from y'all. In order to use, I would get away from y'all. Because I couldn't use if I hung out with y'all. If I stayed connected, and they're talking about staying plugged into the proper juice. If I stayed plugged into y'all, I couldn't get high. But I would get away from y'all because y'all know me. Y'all know me if I say some crazy shit outside of my neck out. You in the relapse mode, man. You finna fucking use, man. What you gonna do? You know, man, this is my thing too, cause like I know it, and it talks about like, man, it talks about recovery. That talks about when it talks about, you know what, we're getting to a place where we forget about the work and the effort. It talks about life and meaning. Life become boring and monotonous again. Recovery became boring for me and became monotonous again, and I wanted. I like living on the fucking edge. I like the excitement that the using brought me, cause it wasn't about the using no more, cause it wasn't working. You know, at the end it wasn't working. It was about the excitement of going and getting a fight and my stomach flipping. And then my last use, I'm getting high with this chick, and she's like, "What the fuck wrong with you?" Cause at this time, and I don't mean to be graphic, but at this time, I'm trying to commit suicide and not even know it. Because I'm gone and I'm shoving in this life. And I'm trying to get that something I'm trying to find. I'm trying to get it. And she's like, "What's wrong with you?" I'm like, "Shut the fuck up. This is my shit. You for the ride." But I'm putting things on it that should have killed me. But God had something better in store for me. You know, and it's like, man. And I'm gonna start reading because I want to carry a message, and literature always gonna give us the message, right? You know, because I ain't got my book with me, but it talks about the different stages that leads to relapse. But first, it talks about the things that help us recover. It talks about anytime I'm in a bad space and I'm in a negative space. It talks about generally if I go to a meeting, you know what? Go to a meeting. What I'm fucked up. Go to a meeting. What's gonna happen? I don't know. But I know I go to meet and I'm going to feel better. It talks about when my negative thinking, if I call somebody, if I read some NA literature, if I do some step work, it generally sends my negative thinking back to the positive. When I try this way of life, because I didn't try this way of life and being fearful, getting on the phone, not knowing what I want, don't know these people. What the hell are they going to talk to me about? All I had to do was pick up the phone and go down on my phone list. By the time I talked about 10 people, the urge or the thing that I had that was irking me to go pick up again, it generally went away. And I was like, wow, that was my first incident of this thing working because I called some people. And I just said, "Hello, my name is Richard, I'm an addict." They took over the conversation. I did that a few times on that list. It's like, that feeling that I had, it went away. Because it talks about obsession and the compulsion. You know, and I had to learn that the obsession is a natural thing. And not to say that it's all right to think about using drugs, but I had to learn to allow the obsession to die a natural death. And I understand that, like, let it die a natural death. Don't entertain the thought. See, because I would entertain when the feeling came over me, I thought I had to entertain it. But I had to learn to let it die a natural death. Start doing some different things. Go to me and change my thought plan, because I can't control what come in my mind, but I can damn sure control if I stay there. So when I started learning how to let it die a natural death, it kept me away from the compulsion. Because once I picked up, I ain't had ability in myself to stop. See, because I, and another thing I talk about, I believe what it talks about in the first edition is self-sufficiency. Because where I come from, it wasn't about nobody doing them for me. It wasn't about nobody helping me. It was about if I don't get it, I don't make it happen, it don't happen. So self-sufficiency kept me stuck in the using process. It kept me stuck where I couldn't grasp this program because I believed in me. And the misinformed information that I was getting from cats that was like me was talking about, man, you don't need them people. You don't need them programs. They brainwashing you. Man, you stronger than that. We can do this. And I'm watching the cats do it, but the two things they talk about maybe being a parent, maybe they wasn't an addict. Or maybe their disease haven't progressed enough where they was at the space that I was at. And it talks about, man, I'm feeling it, I'm starting to feel it, and I got to get there, because it talks about, man, this, I live this, man, and I struggled so hard trying to get this shit in the beginning. And I felt so bad when I couldn't get it, because I thought something was wrong with me. Why the hell I can't get it? Everybody else is getting it. I'm watching cats, I got cats in my ear that, I've been here longer than they've been here. They got more clean time than me. I used to get jealous. That's my time. And until I started appreciating the time that I had, my time is my time, you know. And it was hard. But it talks about I couldn't save my ass and my face at the same time. So I had to stand up and get 30 days and be like, this is my time. And it wasn't until I got like 9 months that I started appreciating my 9 months. Not that I should have 16 years. I got what I got. And I'm proud of it. And my process was my process. But, man, it was talking about, man, I couldn't get this thing, man, and I was trying to get it, man. And I wouldn't surrender. Because surrender wasn't, I didn't understand the concept of surrender to win. I didn't understand that paradox. I didn't understand the ultimate weapon. Because I was afraid of y'all. I couldn't tell y'all. I didn't trust y'all. I believe that airplanes fly. It's like believing airplanes fly, but I refused to get on it. I believe that this program was working because the evidence was apparent to me, because I seen these guys staying clean. You know, and I'm talking about cats came after me, cats that was here before me. I see cats come in and get this thing right away, and I was like, what the hell wrong with me? Why I ain't getting it? It just wasn't my time. So, and everybody walks through the door the first time, they ain't going to get it. You know? And we think that, yeah, once you get here, you ain't never got to use again. I might not be finished yet. You know, and I ain't co-signing. Don't get it wrong. I ain't saying that you had a license to go use. But these are things that I had to free myself so I don't beat myself up so much. Because I could have bet I was going to beat myself up where I would never came back here. Because I wasn't getting it. I wasn't getting clean. It wasn't working for me. So I was putting myself at a place that I didn't belong here. Because, you know, we get it, everybody's supposed to get it right away. And it talks about different degrees. Everybody got different degrees of sickness. Right. And recovery and relapse. And who's an addict? It talks about some people can stop. Maybe they don't see that it affected their life and it was a beginning mess of their everyday life. Some of us had to go to greater streams than others. And you gotta stay there. Maybe I'm not one of them people. And it's not justifying it, but it's the reality is we are who we are. You know, I ain't had 30 years of using that I can see at that moment, but I started using at 11 years old. I stopped at 29 before when I got the 5.5 years clean. But I didn't look at that. I looked at a hardcore user. Because, you know, smoking weed and drinking beer and alcohol, that was like, you know, that was mild. And it was like, talk about that miscarriage. If we don't see the mess right, that it's clogged the messes up with alcohol is a drug. Mm-hmm. Marijuana is a drug. Mm-hmm. It don't matter how hard it is. It don't matter if I use on a daily basis, if I use by myself. It's a parent talking about, am I an addict? If you answer too many of them damn questions, you're an addict. If you did a lot of that stuff by yourself and you didn't want to see at the end, I wouldn't care if it was a joint, if I was just taking aspirin obsessively. See, but we had to come in here. What I'm learning today, with the sponsor came on me now, we ain't chopping people's head off no more for the way they share. We working on, like, just be grateful that they're here. Because all they're trying to do is be a part of. Until they learn the language. Once they learn the language, then you chop their fucking head off. Yeah. But when they first come in, they just trying to be a part of. All we're doing is trying to be a part of, man, because we don't know the language, we don't know where we at, we don't know Romans. You know, we're just trying to be a part of, we're trying to, like, get this way of life. So I had to learn, man, that I suffer from a disease of addiction. See, because I come here not want to be an addict, and then you got to come on. Okay, drugs are only 10% of my problem. What are you talking about? Now I got to understand that I suffer from the disease of addiction. And you're talking about recovering from that. What the hell is the disease of addiction? It talks about, it affects my attitude, my behaviors, and my thinking, and my actions. I'm like, okay. Now I got to put a new twist on it. Now I got to address the disease of addiction? What the? I just want to stop using. Everything else is okay. But it wasn't until I started doing the work that I seen that we start to do a list. We think we were the first step. It talks about things I must accept, things I must admit, things I'm powerless over, things that make my life unmanageable. You do four columns. When you did all four columns, and you looked at it, most of the stuff you said you had to accept, most of the stuff you said you had to admit, things you was powerless over, things that made your life unmanageable, it was in all four columns. So that me trying to disprove this program, but disclaim myself from being here, because I kept trying to say I wasn't trying to be an addict. I realized I was an addict, and not just because of the drug. See, because I come from a place where all my life, when I look back, I was trying to fit in. I was trying to be a part of, from a little boy, and I grew up in a project, so we were around a bunch of little boys, a lot of people. And I always thought the guy next to me was cooler than me. Only to find out the guy next to me thought I was cooler than him. But I was always trying to get with that dis-ease part. I was always had a dis-ease, but I was trying to be like them because I thought less of myself based on my household. I come from a single parent mother. Not only that she was a single parent, she was disabled. My mother was disabled since I was 9 years old. And a churchy kind of, she was a church person. My whole family was a churchy person. And we had to go to church every day. And the boys in the neighborhood, they had to go to church. They mother and father drink. They were there to hang out all night. I couldn't hang out all night. I had to be in the house before the lights went out. And it was that stuff that had me messed up. Because I wanted to be like them. And I never felt that I was measured up. So I was doing things trying to feel that dis-ease with myself that I didn't feel like I was a part of. You know, and the fact that my mother was disabled. And being a kid, 9 years old, I had to learn how to cook. I had to go grocery shopping. I had to go pay the bills. A couple times I got robbed, you know, and that lowered my self-esteem because I felt like a punk. Because a couple times, dudes just walked up and took my money, took my mother's money. I ain't resist. I ain't try to do nothing. I was afraid. And I felt like a punk. Those are things that I'm trying to recover from, and I was trying to try not to feel. Then I started trying to cover them up. And then I found this thing that I put in me that gave me some courage. Gave me some false courage that went, I wish a motherfucker would. You know? So I found that something. I was searching for something. I found it. It made me have the ability to do some stuff that naturally, I'm not naturally built like that. And I misused it. You know, and I thought I was using drugs. Drugs began to use me. Because not only did I use it to make me, give me that, take me to that place I wanted to go, then it took me beyond that. You know, and it's like, man. So my mother being disabled and taking care of her, and I'm talking about being a young, I ain't even a young man, I'm a boy. And having grown up responsibilities. And not that was the part, I had a little brother I had to take care of. And I had to be the stand-up guy in the house because I had a young cat under me that I had to protect. Then I had to, it came to where my mother was disabled at the age that time she was disabled. It wasn't no nurse's aide. It wasn't nobody coming to your house to assist. to wash her up and nothing like that. Those things bother me. Washing my mother up, seeing her private parts, taking care of her. And then I had to go outside and try to play, and the cats in the neighborhood knew. And I got picked on a lot. We didn't have a lot of money, so my clothes was holy. And back then, they was wearing Pro Kids or Converse. I couldn't get a pair of those. We went to A&P and got some buddies. And that helped, you know, lower my self-esteem. And then, you know what really fucked me up fucked my disease of addiction part? That I never exposed, and I see people exposing some stuff that I covered up a lot. My mother being disabled, and not to take none away because she did the best she could. She didn't have the ability, because a lot of the issues are a lot of pain. She didn't have the ability to give us the academics that what I needed in school. So I fronted in school a lot, and I didn't have the ability to read when I was in school. My reading was fucked. And I was, you know, and at that time they was pushing us through school, man. I should have never made it past sixth grade. And they kept pushing me, and the higher grade I kept going into, I didn't have the ability to read, but they still passed me. And I feel so fucking small, man. Because I see, it wasn't just a girl thing, because I thought it was just a girl thing. Girls had the ability to read, all boys was fucked up, we didn't read. But then I started seeing men, the boys, had the ability to read, and I'm like, I feel so small. And I couldn't tell nobody. And then my fourth step, I blamed my mother, I blamed the teachers, but I had to blame myself, because I didn't take the time to go home and study spelling words. I didn't take the time to, like, get with that stuff, because I was working on image time. Because when I came, I was trying to fit in. Image time, you know, fronting ain't easy. I was trying to front, man, like I had it going on. You know, and it wasn't until I came here that my reading improved. My reading proved a hell of a lot. And I'm grateful for the sponsor that, like, I'm going through the steps the second time, you know, but the first time I stopped at my fourth step, so I ain't going to dismiss that I went all the way through. But the first sponsor that I had, he wouldn't let me cheat myself. And I'm grateful for that, because he was like, dude, check this out. I said, man, let me do the steps on tape or something. Let me just tell you about it. He said, no, you're going to write the steps. I said, but my reading and my spelling is fucked up. He's like, you're going to write the steps, man. However you need to put it on paper, you're going to put it down, and me and you going to come to an understanding of what it's saying. That guy did that, and that's the best thing he can ever do for me, because he didn't let me ride myself again. Because I was going to ride myself again. And today I write on the steps, and my spelling is approved, and I don't have a problem asking somebody how to spell something. I just don't fuck with my wife. Because she chops my head off. You can't spell that word? Listen, I work on it. And from where I came from when I got here, it improved a hell of a lot. You know. But all that had effect with me getting this thing, all that had effect with me, you know, why I kept relapsing. Because the inability, I had a lot of stumbling blocks. It wasn't just about my emotions. It wasn't just about my feelings. It wasn't just about my desire to use. You know. So, you know, we need to be mindful. When people are struggling or they not getting it, you got to take the time to go inside and say, what's really going on? The same way I was a classroom clown, I was all that in school. It wasn't that I wanted to be a classroom clown. I needed a diversion to save me. Sometimes it can come between me using, it can come between me either dying or using. And y'all might beat me up for this. Sometimes using can be good for some people, because it can make the difference of me killing myself. Because after 5.5 years clean, I didn't have the ability to tell anybody that I was hurt. Because my first wife left me after having 4.5 years clean. She left me for somebody else. Because I work a lot. I was putting too much time in this recovery thing. You know, because I was in a support group. I had sponsors. I was doing a lot of stuff. I found my niche here. And we did a lot. We got together a lot. And I didn't take the time to spend time with her. So she left me for somebody else. But the cats that I needed, I was judging them. They was dogs. See, because at this point, I learned how to, in this one particular area, I learned how to master not fucking around. I learned how to master not cheating. They was still cheating, fucking everything that moved. And I judged them. Only to find out that I was going to need them. Because once I cut myself off from them, I needed those cats. But I couldn't go back and tell them, like, listen, I thought this, me getting over this, my wife leaving me was going to be a 6-month thing. It turned into 3.5 years. So I stayed clean 2 years out of that. But I went through a thing of, like, they call white knuckling. I was just bearing down, going through the pain. But a lot of times, I found myself in a place where I was clean. And I gave up the apartment. Kids wanted to go with me. I had 3 kids. Came with me. I'm in my brother's house, living like I'm using. Because my brother, he don't use, never use in his life. But his house ain't had no electricity, no fucking proper running water. And me and my 3 kids up in the attic, in his house. And every day, I had some fire on. And every day I was put these 2 shotguns in my mouth, thought about blowing my brains out. Because I didn't have the heart to come tell you, like, listen, I was hurting. That woman was all my life. I loved that woman. She was everything to me. Because that's all I did. Went to work, went home. And I didn't have the ability to come say, listen, I'm hurting. Boss pride. Self-sufficiency again. Telling myself I can get through this. I can make this on my own. So I wound up using again, trying to get back with her. Because she had time too. But she had wound up using, and my disease came with a bright idea. She using. You can really get her now. You can dog her now. But I forgot she was my get-high partner for about 17 years. So I went to her house, tried to use her with some dope. Wind up being used. And wind up saying, fuck my clean time. Because what I found out in that instant moment, I had a moment of clarity. I was told, listen, you don't want to do this. You got 5.5 years clean. I'm like, fuck my clean time. Just like that. Because she meant more to me than my clean time. I didn't appreciate my clean time at that time. But today I appreciate my clean time. I wasn't kidding. I got new wife though. I got blessed, you know, and I was told, you know, I was deprived. But I wasn't hearing that stuff. Because my mind was clouded with pain, hurt. My mind wasn't clouded with the drug, but I was clouded with pain and hurt. You know, I didn't have the ability to tell nobody. So, and then they was told me, just sit in the window and watch the seasons change. They out of God's way. You know, because if I'd have just sit still and stayed out of the way. But more than anything, if I'd have stayed with the identification part, and what I learned to identify with was not the situation, was with the feelings. Because that's what we really connect with feelings today. Because, you know, if I sit there and judge what you did and say, well, that's what kept me using too. I judge that. I ain't do it like that. I ain't get out like that. But I had to learn how to identify with the feelings. That we felt the same. No matter how you use, the feeling was the same. No matter what situation I go through today or somebody else go through, the feeling is the same. That's what I get in touch with. And that makes a difference between recovery and relapsing. We got to get in touch with the feeling. Because this is a feeling disease that affects my feeling. And it's not attained by material things. Because another thing I thought recovery was material. When I first came here, I had this niche. And everybody else was like, how you do it? I got this niche. When I come back in recovery, God has blessed me with, I don't have a problem with working. It's never been my problem. Getting money never been my problem. And it kept me sick. 2 things kept me sick. Getting money and information. I got exposed to a lot of information about recovery. Kept me sick. I couldn't make it. I couldn't recover because I was going on old information. And talking about, I had to disregard all the information that I learned when I first got here. Not that it went anywhere. I had to start from scratch. And not go with the old information. And the ability to make money kept me sick. Because I judged y'all. Motherfuckers be here 10, 12 years, ain't got shit. I get back, 7 months, I got everything I ever had. Everything. House ain't a problem for me. Car wasn't a problem for me. A job wasn't a problem for me. Kept me fucked up because recovery was material gain to me. But I got to talk about, see, what she talked about, this line to talk about the physical part. Once I got my physical part back, I was back. I'm recovered. But recovery ain't the outside thing. It's my spirit that was disrupted. You know? So I don't do that. And I'm blessed today financially and all that, but it's not recovery to me no more. I never put it in a place only God should be. Because I put material gain and wealth and stuff. I don't care about none of that stuff today. I care about my freedom. I care about my peace of mind. I'll take that over all the stuff I got today. Today, you can't pay me to use. Somebody say, yeah, I use, they forced it down because I ain't getting high today. Not today. And I know we try to work on not saying never, never, but as long as I follow this way, I have nothing to fear. I ain't getting high. And recovery is an inside job. What's messed up is my inside. It's how I feel about me. You know, me lacking the ability to grow up. And I'm just trying to grow up, man. Because I'm still that little 11-year-old boy trying to grow up, man. Trying to, like, not go with that stuff that made me feel bad. So, recovery is our aim. That every addict needs, every addict has this opportunity to recover. We can stop using, lose his eye to use, and find a way to live. That's what this is about. That's the hit. That's our message. Just find a way to live. You know? And it's done through spiritual. It's a spiritual solution. Must be addressed by the spirit. And when I learned, when I did my fifth step, it wasn't about, I thought my fifth step was about all that fucked up shit I did that I put in my fourth step. I just want to say, hey, you know about that. It's about the feeling that's connected to it. It's about learning the proper order of my relationship. Never put anything before the God of my understanding. Because anytime I put anything before the God of my understanding, I'm subject to, like, go off and do some fucked up shit. And the proper order of my relationship is God, myself, and my family. And if I keep that in front, I got a shot at this thing, man. It's so important, man. You know, because we, I'm talking about me, because I can get caught up in stuff. And when I learn, that's what my disease is trying to kill me. Because my disease come at me with a weapons of mass destruction. It come at me with everything. And she talking about, to our fears, hidden enemies, procrastination, and apathy. And they talk about, get a dictionary, apathy is like